there's really nothing like a little girl looking up at you, seeing your crown and being like, wow, that's a princess. You mm-hmm. live in a castle. I'm like, wow, I wish I did live in a castle. I wish that that was my life. Or like there was a time where I met someone who was, I want to say either 100 or 101.
Oh, wow.
They had never met a Miss Iowa before either. So being able to be that first for them was so cool. Welcome to Love Girls, the podcast, where every girl has a story.
I'm Jasmine Babers, founder of Love Girls Magazine, and we are always working to uplift real, honest conversations that girls are having, and we do our best to empower them to share their stories and find strength and vulnerability to create change.
And I'm Michaela Hughes Shaw, a longtime volunteer and storyteller at LGM. We've grown up in this organization, and now, as 20-somethings, we want to elevate this platform by giving voice to the young women that drive our mission. There's something so powerful about sharing your story.
We are so grateful you've been moved to tune in and share this space to help girls lead, overcome, and value themselves while empowering others to do the same. Welcome. Welcome back, everybody, to Love Girls, the podcast. I am your co-host, Jasmine Babers, editor and founder of Love Girls Magazine, and I am here with my other co-host, Michaela Hughes Shaw, and today we have a really special episode because we asked you guys to ask us questions, and this episode is all about Michaela. Me and Michaela have been friends for a really long time. Michaela has been around with the magazine for years. She has been one of our best volunteers. She's been one of our best editors, and she's just been a really great friend. So I'm very excited to sit down and have this conversation with you, Mick. Do you want to introduce yourself to the people?
Yeah, I can. This is different. I'm so used to us interviewing people, not me being interviewed on the podcast. So this is exciting.
It is exciting. I'm excited to be in conversation with you. If you could kind of give your bio to the audience.
So I can sure try. I feel like I've worn a lot of hats in my short 20 some years of life, but I am a former Miss Iowa. It was Miss Iowa 2018. I am a recent graduate, so got my degree. That's always good. From the University of Iowa, journalism and mass communication was my major. So now I'm actually transitioning into a big girl job in news. I can't share that just yet, but when I can, you all will be the first to know.
Yay.
And yes, I'm really excited about that. And also just so incredibly nervous, but we will see. We'll see how it goes.
Honestly, don't be. I feel like you're in such a special position, right? Because you're going into news, but news is not new to you. Media is not new to you. I feel like you have a ton of experience from the magazine, from school, your internship that you finished really recently. Do you want to say anything about that?
Yeah, definitely. I actually just wrapped up my fellowship for News 21, which is an organization out of Arizona State University. And we did a deep dive into one topic, and that topic was juvenile justice. Mm-hmm. And really what we found is that there's not a lot of justice in the juvenile justice system. It's really sad. Your zip code really does determine how you come out of that system, or if you're even touched by the system. And I'm sure that you know a lot about that, Jasmine, with the research that you did with foster care too. There's a huge link between the foster care system and the juvenile justice system as well. So I've learned so much during that time about journalism, about those systems, and just how different it is depending on what state or county you're in. There's just so much variation. Yeah, I have had a couple other news internships. So you're right. Like, it's just imposter syndrome. It's just this fear of not being good enough, even though I know that I've prepared, I've worked hard, I've done these programs to prepare myself, but it's just a matter of actually bringing that to the table now and advocating for myself.
Yep. I've been in my job for a little over a year now, and I remember starting and being like, I have no idea what I'm doing. Like, yes. Like you have hired me, yet little do you know, I know nothing, you know? And I feel like you are prepared, and once you get into it and once you're able to kind of get yourself all settled and just do what it is that you're good at, I think that you'll see that it's all going to work out. So I'm very, very excited for you. And the work that you've been doing for your internship is so important. So congratulations on finishing that up. The work that you're doing there is phenomenal and really, really necessary.
Thank you.
Yeah, for sure.
And one other hat that I would say that I wear is that of being someone who started a nonprofit, a local nonprofit here in the Quad Cities, actually, for both mental health and suicide awareness, called How About Hope? And I could not have done that without the magazine. I always say that the magazine kind of grows with me, like it's come with me along every step of life, and it's really cool. So I started a small campaign that then turned into a nonprofit organization. So that's been wonderful. And I took that organization with me all across the state of Iowa. I talked to so many kids and so many adults too, even in nursing homes, about my mission. And I've loved seeing that grow into something so much bigger than I ever thought that it would be.
Yeah. And How About Hope is an amazing organization. I would love to give you the opportunity right now to shout out all your socials where people can follow you, follow How About Hope. And then I would also like for you to kind of talk about where the idea for How About Hope kind of came from. Like, what made you want to start How About Hope? I know that you did get a Difference Maker grant to start some sort of project, but what was the inspiration? When was your moment of obligation really to start your nonprofit?
I love that moment of obligation. I've never thought about it that way, but I do always say that this mission chose me. I definitely did not choose it. I did not wake up one day and just say, yes, this is it. I grew up around quite a few people who dealt with serious mental illness, and I also dealt with a serious mental illness myself of depression, and I had suicidal thoughts when I was about 17, and that's really hard to say, but it's really important to say, because at the time, really nobody knew that that was what was going on in my life. There was a lot of negativity going on in my home. It was just a lot for a young person to deal with. So I really internalized a lot of things, and I just didn't tell people because, yeah, I just didn't think that I could. But after I got help and I was able to overcome and move forward and understand that I'm not alone, I really wanted and felt the need to share that with other people and to let other people know that they didn't have to suffer in silence. And the more that I talked about it, the more that I learned about it, and the more people that I learned actually dealt with this too. It's still something now that I've learned a lot more through founding a nonprofit and researching this and using it as my pageant platform. I've just found that, you know, I think it's 1 in 5 adults and kids deal with the serious mental illness at some point in time in their life. And that's a lot of people. And we should not feel so stigmatized when we talk about it. But I just remember how freeing it was to talk about it. And I always wanted to help other people feel empowered to be able to share their story, because I really feel like open dialogue is one of the ways that we will end the stigma attached to mental illness and to suicidal thoughts and to losing someone to suicide. I know how important it is to talk about it, so I always want to help somebody else do the same thing.
Yeah, I admire you so much, because you've always been really open and honest about your struggle with depression, and then you took that struggle and then you turned it into something amazing, something beautiful that not only helped you, but helps your community. And I was talking to one of my mentors the other day, and we were going over what defines somebody as brave. And we kind of settled on this thought that when you've gone through something really traumatic, really hurtful, and you take that hurt and that trauma and you turn it into something that benefits other people, those are the bravest people in the world. And so I know it's not something that you probably think about on a day-to-day, but what you've done with How About Hope is remarkable. Truly, because
thank you. It is.
because when you think about how other people sort of take their trauma and use it to harm themselves or others, it really just takes special people and a special person to turn that hurt and that trauma around and decide, make that conscious decision to do something good with it. So you should really be proud of that. And I know I'm proud of that for you.
Well, and thank you.
Yeah, it's the truth. And we have a question. So again, we asked our audience to kind of submit questions, submit things that you want us to talk about. And we got really good responses. And so many of you have asked a really amazing question. So we're going to try and get to as many of them as possible. But somebody asked, somebody from How About Hope asked, when is a time that you've struggled and how did you overcome it?
So Overcome in our acronym has always spoke to me because I feel like that's just really what my life is. It's just this big culmination of overcoming struggles and being more than I look like I would be on paper. Mm-hmm. So during that time when I was experiencing depression and also, I want to say depression doesn't ever go away. You just learn other ways to cope with it and deal with it. And you, once you understand how you function when you're in a time of depression, you can make better decisions. You can take better care of yourself. So I think I've just learned a lot more about it at this time. But I was suicidal around that same time as well. And I'll talk a little bit about my home life, what that looked like. My mom had actually just had a major back surgery, and it left her wheelchair bound for a few years. So it was really hard. I was 16 or 17 at the time, and I was now learning how to go grocery shopping. I was making sure that I could pick up my little brother after school, making sure that we could eat, because there was just a lot that she couldn't do at that time. I had to grow up very fast. But at that same time, my mom went through a divorce, so I lost the solid father figure that I had in my life. And at that same time, my biological father was in prison. Mm-hmm. So there was just a lot of hurt, a lot of negativity all at once. And that was really what led me to feel the way that I felt, because I just felt like I was so out of control. I just couldn't deal with everything that was going on around me. I was trying to still put on a smile at school. I was still trying to be that person that was there for everybody, but I was really just struggling with so much at home. But I was able to get help after asking my mom for help. I told my best friend that I was depressed, and I told her about how I'd been feeling. My boyfriend at the time too. Mm-hmm. Shout out to you. You know who you are. So I was lucky, because when I did open up, I was able to get help. Not everybody has that sort of support system, whether that be for, you know, just family structure reasons, whether that be for parents being busy. I know that I was really lucky to be able to come out on top of that, to be able to understand that a lot better, to be able to be okay. I know that there are a lot of people that truly struggle.
Something that you said really caught my attention. It kind of resonated with me. You said that depression doesn't really ever go away. You just find ways to cope with it. I'm interested in you saying a little bit more about that. We had a question submitted from Taylor Nyan. Shout out to Tay.
Hey, Taylor.
So she asked, what is happiness to you? And in what ways do you lead with love every day? I think this question is really perfect for the moment we're in right now, because I understand that everybody has sort of a different idea about what happiness is. And it's interesting that you say that depression doesn't really ever go away. So I'm curious to know, when you feel the happiest, like what's happening around you to make you feel happy? And how do you recognize when you need to make shifts or changes to get yourself to be in a better place?
When you think about happiness on TV, what I think about is, I don't know why this image is coming to my mind, but I'm just going to say it. Mm-hmm. I think about Teletubbies, right? And I think about the baby in the sun. And if you don't remember this, I'm sorry. I'm 23. This is what I watched at that time. So happiness isn't always like that. Happiness is sometimes just being content with where you're at. Happiness is shutting off your phone sometimes and just taking some moments for yourself to recharge. It's reading a good book. It's coming across a funny video on Facebook and sharing it with your friends. Really, happiness can be anything that you need it to be at that time. It doesn't have to be this over exuberant moment of just like, wow, I'm so happy right now. That's not what it has to be. It's very situational, and it just depends on the day, because sometimes you don't need much to make you happy. But then speaking to that other side of when I recognize that I'm going through a depressive state, or I'm starting to fall into, I don't want to call it a darkness, but sometimes that's what it is. And it just feels like a cloud is looming over you and you're just trying to make it through the day. You're trying to make it through the week. When I recognize that that's happening for myself, I try my best to take a step back. So then that way I can get myself back to that happiness and whatever that is at the time. It's really important to know yourself and to learn yourself and to understand when you are on top of the world and when you're not okay. And to think about what it is that put you in those two different places, right? Why is it that I am so sad right now? Is it because I'm overwhelmed? Do I have too much on my plate? Is there too much going on in my life? Did somebody say something to me that didn't sit right and I didn't address it and now I'm sitting with it? There could be so many reasons. There could be something really traumatic going on in your family as well. You have to consider that too. So, you know, try to take control of the situation in the best way that you can, but also know that it's so okay to feel. It's absolutely okay to sit in your emotions, because that's one thing I feel like as a society, we just don't teach our kids and our adults to do. We don't teach people to sit with discomfort or to sit with sadness. If anything, we just tell them to brush it off and, oh, just keep moving, keep yourself busy. You know, do this, do that, instead of being like, okay, it's all right to have this bad day. Do whatever you need to do to take care of yourself during that bad day. And then just try to make the next day a better day.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's so real. And I think that for me, I am definitely the kind of gal who uses being busy as a coping mechanism for when I'm not feeling my best. And mm-hmm. I think that you make such a good point with sometimes you just have to sit with it. Sometimes you can't ignore when you're sad or upset or feeling like you're in a little bit of a darkness and in a little bit of a gray area, you know?
Yeah.
It's always important to kind of look those moments in the face, ask yourself, you know, why you're here, and then do your best to make yourself happy and give yourself what you need in those moments. So that's so good.
That's
really good.
When you say gray area, that makes me think about this organization that was started out of Augustana College, actually, by a young woman that I know named Haley, and it's called the Gray Matters. And I think that's so important. That is a message that we should just continue to preach, is that the gray does matter. Life is not always going to be black and white. You're going to have a lot of in between. So, yeah.
That's so good. That's so good. And can you really quickly give us the social media for How About Hope? How can we find you, follow you, learn a little bit more about How About Hope and your mission and what you do?
Yeah, definitely. I'll tell you a couple of our upcoming plans or our hopes because, you know, COVID-19. But one thing that we really want to do is establish some sort of scholarship for both high school and college age kids. Yes, because one thing that I know about depression is that it can be extremely debilitating. Mm-hmm. And if that is a parent that's going through that, if that is a kid that's going through that, either way, it's going to greatly affect you, especially in that transitional period from high school to college, because that's exactly when that happened for me. So I want to create some sort of scholarship that people can apply for if they've been impacted by mental illness in some way, or if they've been impacted by suicide in some way, just to help them get into that next step and get that higher education. We also want to host a minority mental health conference, and that's really important because there's just a lack of resources, of mental health care resources for those who are Black and Brown, and we recognize that, and we really want to do something about it. So I'm looking forward to that. Our hope was to have it in 2021. We will see what happens. We don't want to put too much of a time constraint on it because we understand that this virus is literally changing every single day. But yeah, we just want to start reaching those who maybe have not been reached before. But you can find us on our website at howabouthope.com, and all of our social media is also at howabouthope. So you can find us there. We'll be there. We'll be waiting.
Awesome. I think that a lot of people who tune in and listen to the podcast might know you because you were Miss Iowa 2018, yes?
Yes, I was. I'm now in retirement.
And that was an amazing year. It was an amazing year to watch you go through. I think that there are a lot of people out there who are really interested in hearing a little bit more about your journey. I know that me in particular, I'm sort of interested in hearing about what it was like to be in college, having to take that year off, what that year was like for you. And after your reign was over, what was that adjustment like?
There's actually a story that comes to mind when I think about the transition.
Yeah.
Because yes, it was a really big decision to make, to take off a year of school. I would have been going into my senior year, actually. So I was almost done. I was going to graduate class of 2019. Little did I know I would graduate in the middle of a pandemic. Just who would have known? But I think everything happened for a reason. So the transition is really interesting. I distinctly remember sitting down on the first day in my applied digital and social media class. And we were told that we would be Googling our classmates. And I said, oh my goodness, because I'm very strategic about the way that I tell people about the fact that I was Miss Iowa, mm-hmm. because there is a great misunderstanding about what the role of Miss Iowa is. Because, well, think about it. What did you think Miss Iowa was before you knew anything about the program? What did you think it was? Do you remember going to that first pageant with me?
I do indeed. You drug me like halfway across Iowa to go to the pageant. And it was like my first experience in the pageantry world. And it was actually fun, but it did feel very beauty oriented. It felt like a competition. It felt like women just competing for a crown. We found out that it was much more than that, but I think that that's like the general consensus around pageantry when you don't really know much about it.
Yeah. And so I brought you along because I said, Jasmine, I got invited to this. I have no clue what's going to happen. Will you come with me? Please and thank you. I'm picky about the people that I tell that I was Miss Iowa, just because when you think Miss Iowa, you're like, oh, beauty pageant. Oh my goodness. You walk around in gowns all day. Like, I bet you've been in so many parades. And that's really not what the job is most of the time. Yes, there are moments of that, but 90% of the time, that's not what I'm doing.
Right.
But anyway, I'm sitting in class and my classmate Googled me and the exercise was to evaluate somebody's online brand, or even to evaluate if they had an online brand or not, because one thing that we're learning is that it's really important to have some sort of online presence when you're applying for jobs, because mm-hmm. people want to just see what you're up to, see what you really like outside of work. And yeah, someone wrote on the note card like, oh, you're so inspirational. I had no idea you were Miss Iowa, blah, blah, blah. And then it just turned into this big thing. And I was like, oh, I don't want these people to think that I'm not intelligent because mm-hmm. I was Miss Iowa 2018. Because that is something that my former Miss Iowa's had told me, is that, granted, it was a different time, but there was not the same respect for the titles that there is now. And back before Miss Iowa was really a full-time job, it was really a beauty pageant. Like Miss America was a scholarship program, but it started off as a bathing suit contest in the 1920s. Like, we have to talk about what the history was, right? So that was interesting. But usually the response to me being Miss Iowa is just like, what? No way. Like, that's so cool. And then people have tons of questions. It was a lot. And it was one of the most stressful years I've ever had in my entire life. I think I could say the most stressful year, but it was also the most rewarding year. And it still shows up for me today in job interviews. It shows up for me today in various events around the community. People will always recognize me as that. So really, I guess what I'm trying to say is the transition is that my life will never be the same. Mm-hmm. This is normal, and that will always be something that I carry with me, but I'm really proud of it. And it was a year that definitely changed me for the better. It helped me learn a whole lot about myself. It helped me learn how important boundaries are, because I had no boundaries. I said yes to every single event, but I did that because I know that there are people that have never come into contact with the Miss Iowa before, whether you're 3 years old or you're 103 years old, right? And I don't want me being too tired or too exhausted from everything else that's going on to stop that experience for them. So every time I was in that room with whoever that was, I would turn it on. I would be the best Miss Iowa that I could be. And it has paid off. It definitely has, because there's really nothing like a little girl looking up at you, seeing your crown and being like, wow, that's a princess. You mm-hmm. live in a castle. I'm like, wow, I wish I did live in a castle. I wish that was my life. Or like, there was a time where I met someone who was, I want to say either 100 or 101.
Oh, wow.
They had never met a Miss Iowa before either. So being able to be that first for them was so cool.
I love that. And it was really interesting also to kind of do my best to support you through the years of like transition, and just knowing where we had come from that fateful day when we traveled across the state of Iowa to go to a pageant, to literally watching you on TV on the Miss America stage. Like, there's not like a good sequence of words to put together to kind of like describe how proud I was to see you make those dreams that you had come true. I think that, again, it's just a testament to the kind of person that you are. I think that it's really interesting that you talked a little bit about personal brands, and that you kind of had this moment in your classroom where you're like, yo, I really don't want you guys to know about this part of my life, because you said you had to be strategic about it. And mm-hmm. I think that that's sort of a theme that runs between you and I, and also a lot of young women who want to be seen as intelligent, but also you are a beautiful, beautiful young woman. And it's one of those things where you were in pageants, but you have so much to offer, and you want to put your best foot forward, whatever that may be in that moment. Mm-hmm. And so I'm interested in you talking a little bit more maybe about like personal brand. And I know that there's always this idea that your social media presence is kind of like a reflection of maybe your best self or your most outward self, the self that you want people to see when they're not actually in close contact with you. And it's a really tricky thing to do. It's a really tricky thing to figure out. And I'm also curious to kind of know if you could sort of sum up what you want your personal brand to be, what that would sound like, what that would look like for you, and any advice that you have to our audience, maybe our younger audience, about kind of shaping your personal brand and how to do that, how to go about it, and what it was like for you to kind of figure that out.
My brand has really evolved with me as I grow as a person. Mm-hmm. I think we all have those Facebook memories that come up and we just cringe and we're like, who did we think we were posting this on social media? Why did we think that that was okay? Like you said, being strategic, I recognize that there are a lot of people watching me. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that to be big-headed by any means. I'm just saying that with me being Miss Iowa, that's something that will always be a part of me now. And even prior to that, too, with the magazine and just with taking on these various roles of being a role model for young girls, I know how important it is for me to share positive things with my audience because I know, like I said, there are always people watching me. They're looking to me for advice. They're looking to see what I'm up to, sometimes even for inspiration. And that can be a really heavy weight to carry, but I feel like I have made it a part of me now. And it's actually helped me be a lot more responsible online. Mm. And it's helped me be a lot more strategic about what it is that I share about myself with the world. Because once you put something on the internet, it's out there. You can never get that back. Right. You can delete it, but it might still be there. I would say my brand, it truly is an extension of me. I try to keep it positive, but I also try to show when things are not okay as well, because I feel like social media can really be a highlight reel. Mm-hmm. It can be the best moments of our lives. It can be when we win this award or when we start this new job or we do this or we do that, we go on vacation. But really, day-to-day life is not like that for anyone. Unless you're a celebrity, then maybe that is your day-to-day life. But it's really important to come across as authentic in your branding. I am by no means a major influencer. There's still a lot that I need to learn about online branding, but I have tried to be really positive, and I've also tried to be quite vulnerable with those who do follow me, because I know how important it is to have authenticity in a space where there's photoshopping, there is fabrication of stories, there is just a lot of inauthenticity. So I try to be a light in whatever way that I can. Just think about what's important to you, mm-hmm. and think about how you can bring that into every single thing that you do. I was sitting down with one of my mentors the other day, and we talked about how storytelling and connecting people, those are my two things. Those are my two really big life themes, I guess we could call them. And it's really important to be self-aware, but to understand what it is that you care about. So ask yourself, what do I care about? What do I really enjoy doing? What is really important to me to share with those around me? Start there. That's something that is so crucial. You have to know yourself before you start promoting something, right? So in terms of sharing that message to a greater audience, I would say just be smart, be strategic, think about what is the best way that you can share that message. And if you don't know that quite yet, follow people that share that message and see what it is that they're doing. Look to those around you for advice when it comes to the online space and in your own life too. Try to surround yourself with people who are doing what it is that you want to do. I feel mm-hmm. like that's a really great way to grow and to learn so much about that space that you hope to be in later on.
I love that. I know we started out this episode with you kind of giving your own bio of who you are right now. I'm really interested if we were filming this 10 years in the future and you were giving your bio and this was the perfect world, what would your bio be?
My eyes just got so big. I wish that you could see me. I feel like that is the question that people always get in pageants, right? Where do you see yourself in 5 years? Where do you see yourself in 10 years? You get those in job interviews. I hope that wherever I am and whatever I'm doing, that I'm happy and that I'm making a difference. That is one thing that I will always aim to do, is to make a difference. I am currently starting a position in TV media, and I would love to see where that takes me. Mm-hmm. In 10 years, it could be really cool to have my own show in some form where I get to bring on people that can share their story and can inspire others to overcome challenges, to live another day, to just be their best selves because they see someone else doing it. I think storytelling, and I know that you know this as well, storytelling is so powerful. It can literally change lives. And if I can give someone a space to share with a greater audience, I would love to do that. And maybe that won't be in TV. Maybe that will be in podcast or audio format. Who knows what media will look like in 10 years. But I hope that How About Hope continues to grow and that it's something that I can give a lot more time and energy to. I'm just hoping that I will still be able to be a voice for people who feel like they don't have a voice. That's really important to me. It's really important that I help elevate people's stories because everyone has a voice and everybody deserves to have their story heard.
Yeah, every girl has a story.
Every girl has a story.
No, that's amazing. You are amazing, and I've thoroughly enjoyed this conversation with you. It's cool just to be able to sit down and feel like we're just having a chat. This is literally what it sounds like when we talk on the phone, and so
it kind of feels like
we're having our usual chat on the phone, but we'll just be sharing it with the entire world. So that's fun.
And we're both drinking coffee. Granted, our phone conversations are a bit rowdier than this.
They are. So we are going to head into the speed round. I'm very excited. I made these questions myself. Are you ready?
Yeah.
you know the rules, so you have to answer it in as few words as possible. You don't get any time to think or anything like that. It's just whatever comes to your mind. You've played this game before.
Okay.
All right. What is your favorite makeup brand?
Maybelline, or anything drugstore, because I'm a broke college student. Well, not anymore, but you know what I'm saying.
We're beauty on a budget.
Absolutely.
If you were a color, what color would you be?
I'm a mix between yellow and gray.
You think you're gray? I mean, I love gray. Honestly.
I do too. Gray just speaks to me.
What is your favorite season of the year?
Summer.
Summer, yeah.
I love the sun. I love having some warmth and swimming and doing all of the summer things.
You can only drink one other beverage besides water for the rest of your life. What is it?
Coffee, because if I didn't have coffee, I wouldn't be a functional human being.
And this is why we're soulmates.
Yes.
And what is the weirdest thing someone has asked you to do while you were Miss Iowa?
So, I had an appearance at a hunting lodge. It was called Heroes Lodge in Washington, Iowa. I didn't know what a wild game potluck was, but really what that means is that everything that we're eating, somebody caught and brought to the potluck. So, I would have to say the weirdest thing that I've done is eat raccoon stew.
Was it good?
It tasted like a gamey roast beef. Wasn't too bad, but I think it was just the thought of the fact that I was eating a raccoon that really didn't sit well with me. But yeah, good people though. I learned a lot at that appearance, but yes, I had raccoon.
Didn't love the raccoon, but y'all were great. Good company. Yeah.
Wouldn't do it again. Would not eat that again, but would go see the people again.
Oh my goodness. Well, Michaela, this has been super, super fun. I am actually really excited that we got the opportunity to do this and just sit down and chat, have a conversation about you and who you are. I've learned actually a few things that I didn't know before. The raccoon thing is new to me, y'all. But this has been amazing. Can you share with the people how they can follow you in particular on social?
Yeah, so all of my social media is my name. So Mikhayla Hughes Shaw, HughesShaw. If you can't follow that, I understand. There's a lot of letters there. But Michaela Hughes Shaw on Instagram, at MHughesShaw on Twitter, and Michaela Hughes Shaw on Facebook as well. So come find me. Let's be friends. I just want to say thank you so much for having me on as a guest today. This was a different role, but I really had a good time. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to give us a rating on Apple Podcasts if that's where you listen. Leave us a review, leave us a comment, whatever it may be. And be sure to share this episode and our other episodes with those around you. We want to grow our audience and we want to learn more about you as well. So please send us messages, send us emails, go to our website, check out our blog, all of those things. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, all at Love Girls Magazine. So come find us. So on today's segment of Behind the Scenes of Love Girls Magazine, we're going to talk about the thing that really drives our mission, storytelling, and how you can tell your story in the magazine. So I think it's really important to start off by just saying that everybody's story matters. I know I touched on this in the episode, but it's still so true. Everyone has a story to tell. It's just a matter of sharing it. So, Jasmine, what advice do you have to someone who wants to write a story? And not just a story, but their story.
We welcome any and all young women who are ready to tell their own personal narrative. Really, we've tried to get our programming to be really solid so that young people can have some support from our mentors who are amazing writers so that we can really help them hone in on their story and all the sort of highlights and maybe even lowlights that they want to share. And I think that when we're talking about storytelling, there's actually a lot of different ways to do storytelling. Oftentimes we have girls who want to write, but a lot of times girls are interested in modeling and photography and podcast. So there's a lot of different mediums that we use in order to make storytelling happen. So I think that the first thing that I would say is really consider how you want to tell your story. Don't feel limited by storytelling in the way that you think that it's only writing, because there are so many other ways to tell your story. And I think that the second piece of advice that I would give is that a lot of times girls feel like they don't have anything to say. A lot of times girls feel like, my story isn't special or nothing profound happened to me, and it's just not true. When we say every girl has a story, we really mean it, because every girl has overcome something in their life. Every girl has faced a struggle in their life. Every girl has had good moments in their lives. And so we want to really think about what has made this girl's story special and highlight that. And we encourage young women to do that as well. Thinking about what has defined your story, what makes you who you are, and then kind of turning that into personal narrative.
Yeah, that's really great advice. And now, if somebody does specifically want to write, I think it's important to note that yes, there are rules in writing, but you can break those rules. You can do whatever you want to with your storytelling, and you do not have to feel constrained. And you also don't have to worry about not being the best writer. That is what editors are for. And actually, I was fortunate enough to be the senior assistant editor for quite a few years. And even before that role, I was always helping girls make their story better. And I have editors too. Editors really just push you to dig deeper and to think more about what it is that you're saying on the page. So don't be worried about thinking that your writing isn't good enough, because that's just not the case. If it does need some tweaking, that is what the mentors in the magazine are there for.
For sure, 100%. And I think that when you are trying to write your story, and you're looking for some tips, I think that the biggest thing, the thing that you want to keep in mind the most, is that you want to be honest and you want to be descriptive. When it comes down to you putting the pen to the paper or typing it out on your Word document, the biggest things to remember is I need to be honest and I need to be descriptive, because those are really two key things that make a story special. You can always go to lovegirlsmagazine.com and contact us and tell us that you are ready to tell your story, and we can figure out a way to get you started.